Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us here on the YouTube channel, on the podcast side, however you're listening to us today. Thank you for making us a part of your daily Packers content feed. I am your co-host, Dan Kotnick. Joining me today, it's not Andy Herman, unfortunately. You've got the amalgamation that I think between the three of us can like maybe equal half of what Andy Herman
if we're lucky.
Able to put out there.
If we're on our game, for sure.
Yeah. Which, with this Friday crew, you never know. It's Monty Moore and it's Camille Davis. Guys, how are you doing on this Friday?
I am doing good. This is... We're deep into off season now, so it's like we're the true dead zone between combine and draft. This is when only the diehards are here. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm doing well myself. Still missing football. March Madness is going to be able to give me some entertainment as a Marquette grad, looking to see how far they can go this year. But yeah, happy to be talking some Packers football. That gives me like my fill during the off season. Just a little something here.
Yeah, this the true dead zone, because we're past the combine. Pro days are pretty much like wrapping up. The free agency like flurry is all done. There's nothing here.
The first week free agency adrenaline is worn off for most people by now.
You called them diehards, Monty. We're sickos at this point. If you're here and you're following Packers content like we are throughout every single day leading up to, you're a sicko like us, and we love you. Nice. We love that you're here. Packers news, though, a little bit of something dropping, like Camille said, a little bit of morsel for us to get us through another week. The Packers did re-sign linebacker, special teamer, Eric Wilson today. He was one of four, I believe, outstanding free agents from last year that have not been their future for 2024 has not been decided. I think Patrick Taylor, Josiah DeGuara, and I had the third one up. There's one more out there that's still Rudy Ford. That's right. I knew it was a big one. Or at least a position. Yeah. Rudy Ford, probably still the last one out there that we're looking for a real Eric Wilson. I mean, Eric Wilson or Rudy Ford, who, if you had to pick one of those two to get onto the roster and guarantee a spot in 2024, which one is more impactful at this point?
I definitely think Eric Wilson. I mean, even, you know, we universally pretty much agreed that safety was going to be the weakest spot on the roster. That's even if all those guys came back. So I definitely think Eric Wilson, especially because he's one of those special teams guys that was so good for them. So you brought back Tyler Davis, you brought back now Eric Wilson, you brought back Keyshawn Nixon, they brought back Corey Ballantyne. Like, those are their best special teams players. They brought them all back. And, you know, in an extreme pinch, in a really bad situation, he could play from scrimmage, but that's not why you're bringing him back. And the saddest thing about it is he had a play that probably would have lived on forever had the Packers won in San Francisco. That would have been, you know, had they gotten to the Super Bowl or whatever, that definitely would have been in the highlight reel.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, before they run out of the tunnel or whatever.
That's like that kind of play is on the level of Spill It, Pick It when it comes to like
real
Super Bowl DVDs.
I think I would agree with that, just given the fact that we know historically special teams has been an area of weakness for the Green Bay Packers. We know that at this point. And we also know that Eric Wilson is somebody who contributes positively to that unit, in addition to him being somebody who's just a good depth linebacker piece. You don't want him to come in and be playing major snaps, but in a pinch, as we saw in the playoffs, like, him being in the game is not necessarily a net negative, but you don't want to necessarily lean on that. But given his value to special teams and how much we've talked about getting this unit to be just average at like average special teams we've been asking for. Like, the bar hasn't been really high, and I feel like with his talent level and just having more continuity on that side of the ball as well could be helpful for the Packers team. So I think I will go with Eric Wilson as well. No shade to Rudy Ford. Last year's safety group was just an interesting bunch. Like,
yeah,
we knew it was the weakest spot, and it feels like every other week it was somebody different who I'm like, you know what? He should start. It should be Ford. Nope. It should be Owens. Nope. You know what?
Let's. Yeah, there was that. Like, there was that constant rotation of Jonathan Owens, Anthony Johnson Jr., Rudy Ford. Like, which guy was going to play next to Darnell Savage when Darnell Savage was healthy? So, yeah, just knowing that was going to, that room was probably going to have to be wiped out and rebuilt. I think there was no question that they. And especially they wanted Wilson back because the 49ers are sniffing around him too. And we saw what happened last time, a linebacker from the Packers that was mostly on special teams, but then Oren Burks went to San Francisco and was, playing his ass off while he was there. So I don't think they wanted that to happen again.
Yeah, we know. We don't want another Oren Burks situation. I do think I agree ultimately. That Eric Wilson is probably the more impactful of the two. You're kind of like splitting hairs when you're talking about special teams linebacker,
right?
Third string safety. I only pose the question because, once the Packers made their decisions on Bakhtiari and AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones, like those are kind of the three of the main ones. We kind of move past everyone else was kind of in a situation of it'd be nice to have back or, it would be good to bring back, but we don't really, they're not the impact players. When you look at the remaining players that were on that list, Eric Wilson and Rudy Ford were kind of sticking out. And before this signing and you start kind of talking about the special teams, you almost kind of think automatically, I think as a Packer fan, just like you need depth at safety. We need safeties and Rudy Ford has been a guy that's just been there and, kind of he's a body and he's filled in, to the extent that he can. And so I agree though. I think it's a great move. It's surprising. Like Eric Wilson, you read some of the stats when you look back on it, top 10 in the NFL in special teams tackles. He's been leading the Packers the last 2 years. Like this, that is one of the guys that will never show up on a stat line, will never show up in big highlight reels or something, but like you guys all alluded to, games sometimes can be won or lost on guys like Eric Wilson.
Yep.
And to an extent, pretty much in
the playoffs too.
Yeah.
That tends to happen.
The San Francisco game almost got won or lost based on Eric Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah. So glad to have Eric back in the green and gold. Speaking of special teams, it transitions very nicely into sort of the topic we want to discuss today. Monty, you bring up Kashawn Nixon coming back-to-back, all-pro kick returner. The NFL Rules Committee releasing their proposals that the team owners will vote on to see if they'll be adapted for the upcoming 2024 season. Very impactful ones. I mean, these are things that will likely, just like a couple of years ago when they had the pass interference reviewable stuff, impacted a full season. This is something that, these are two things that will have huge impacts. The first one, non-special teams related, the drop tackle.
The hip drop.
Rule. Like, making it a 15-yard penalty.
Yeah.
If for another rule that they were requiring these referees to interpret at game speed and not make mistakes. We'll set that off to its own little compartment right now. We will come back to that and hopefully eviscerate the NFL for even considering a rule like this. But let's stick with the one that's going to change maybe one of the most iconic parts of football, the kickoff, looking at making it resembling more of like the XFL style where the players. So do we have the graphic? Did we get the graphic loaded or can we, I'm trying to describe it the best we can. So the kicker kicks the ball from the same spot and everybody else on the both return teams lining up on the plus side of the field. So on the 40 and the 35, 5 yards apart. And basically, you got to kick the ball inside the 20.
Yeah.
For it not to be a illegal kick, basically. I don't even think it's called a touchback at that point. It's an illegal kick.
It's got to be inside the 20. In the landing zone.
Yeah. So basically the rule, the idea of the rule, make kickoffs more safe and encourage more kickoff returns at the same time. I didn't realize that the numbers were so stark, but I remember in 2010, and I actually, if Wes Hockowitz is listening, I wrote in to Ask Vic back in the summer of 2010 when they were proposing this rule change. And I said, they'll never be another kickoff return in the league. And Vic said, and Vic told me, let's give it time to breathe. Well, Vic, back in 2010, I think it was said 87% kickoffs returned, down to 27.
Yeah.
This 27 or 22% this past year. That is an enormous drop. And so I want to start asking you guys, just in terms of not even getting into the rule, but the kickoff itself, is it something that's important to you as a football fan? Like to see that kind of happen?
Yes. It's one of the most exciting plays that you can have in football, in my opinion, because it feels kind of like, okay, this is routine. Like we're going to kick the ball and see what happens. And you have to things have to break so right for you. Blocking has to be right. You have to see the right lanes. You have to have a returner with the right acceleration who can read the lanes and break one. Like to see a player break for a touchdown on a kickoff return, it's one of my favorite things in football because it's so exciting. And it's such a momentum shifting play. Because like your offense, you have to come out there to score. One play, you're gone, touchdown. Like I've always loved the kickoff and to see how it's declined and making touchbacks like the new thing where it's like, well, we're going to get the best field position most likely if we just do a touchback.
Right, not even try.
Yeah, like not even try. And I feel like this new rule takes that away. Like it's encouraging you to try to kick into that landing zone because the penalties, if you miscalculate, can be a lot more severe than what you got before. Like not hitting in that landing zone, like starting at the 40, like that's game changing.
And that's what's so nice about it because they kind of incentivize you to not still get the touchback because the touchback becomes the 35. So you're really only saving 5 yards. Mm-hmm. But maybe get into the landing zone and your team, you know, the kicking team can make a play on the returner. But I'm with Camille. I mean, especially right now, I mean, we have the best kick returner in the league, right? So I'm glad that this rule would encourage more returns on his part, although he returns a lot of kickoffs out of the end zone.
Well, they said the Packers led the league in kickoff returns last year by a wide margin. I think the Packers returned 80 some kickoffs last year is what I saw. And I think the second closest was the Commanders with 60 something. Kishon Nixon, there's a reason Kishon Nixon is the Pro Bowl kick returner because he's probably really the only player in the league. Returning,
he returns every single one, it feels like,
and sometimes to the chagrin of some players, where they're like, some fans, I mean, they're like, just take the touchback. Yeah. But like this again, like you're giving him more incentive to be able to run it back. I saw he tweeted out when this was proposed, like, go ahead and pass this rule change so I can go back to back to back. And I'm like, exactly, like this is a rule. And when you have a dynamic returner where it can really flip the field for you, and as a Packer fan, with Kishon Nixon being our returner. Need it, want it, please approve that at the owners meeting.
Yeah, and with the kicking team not being able to get a head start, you know, to fly down the field and make a play, I mean, your speedy kick returners or guys with the best vision are going to be at a huge advantage because it's not even about let's see what lanes are developing while I'm returning. It's they can't even start to come get me until I touch the ball.
It almost becomes like a running play because you've got basically like an offensive line, a defensive line. You get the ball, like you might get the ball 10 yards back from the line of the line of scrimmage. one hole opens up, and like you said, like a guy, a speedy guy like that can take advantage of him.
Can you imagine? And I know we're Packers, but can you imagine like Devin Hester? He's probably sitting at home like, why couldn't I have this opportunity?
He's probably looking up if you could come back into the league after you retired and gotten elected to the Hall of
Fame.
Like
a Desmond Howard. Like, this type of rule in with a Desmond Howard, like, he was already dynamic.
Yeah.
But you know what? I will say, though, as a football fan, because Camille, you touched on it, the kickoff itself right now is so iconic that it's hard to imagine a change like this. And I understand, like, what we consider football right now, back in the 60s, 70s, was not football.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, completely different game. Every generation with rule change, like, this isn't football anymore. Well, that's the football we grew up with. And so, obviously, like, it makes sense. Like, every generation is going to have a different kind of iteration of football. But, God, it just feels like ever since, you know, if I can go to, like, my Howard Gosell, like, ever since Newt Rockne and Teddy Roosevelt decided to put a pigskin on the field. There's always been a kickoff like this, you know, and it just feels like we're changing something so unique to football, you know?
And it's the closest thing to it. I mean, the kickoff returns and punt returns, it's kind of like the closest thing that football has to ballet. It's like everything's got to be so precise, and when things work and all and they move in unison and it's working, like, it's a beautiful thing to watch, especially, you know, when the broadcast do that awesome sky cam where it's flying over and tracking the players, and as
you're like following it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, when that happens and it hits for a return, that's a great thing to watch.
Like that, the one from 2 years ago, Keshawn Nixon against the Vikings. It perfectly, the sky cam perfectly pivoted right as he's breaking free. And yeah, like what you said, Camille, like, you get that instant shock of like, he's gone.
Because then they switch it around and he's running into the camera.
Yeah.
As it's tracking. Yeah. That one was amazing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And just thinking about if they do propose this rule change and it's approved and we see it implemented in next season, maybe it happened that fast. I know it's still kind of fuzzy on when it'll be implemented, but let's just say it'll be implemented for the 2024 season. It is just a 1-year test. So if it doesn't work out, they can always revert back to what they were doing. Like, they're just trying to find a way to keep the kickoff in the game, but also make it safer. Because one thing with this new rule proposal, with no one being able to move until the ball hits the ground, like, outside of the return men, of course, but that aspect of it, it takes so much of that collision out, which led to the head injuries, which led to soft tissue injuries. So it takes all of that out the game, but still gives you opportunity to see that a kickoff return happen. So it's like trying to find the best of both worlds. Like, how do we make this as safe as we possibly can while also keeping it in the game? So it'll be interesting to see how it works over a 1 year, especially since the XFL, who they got this idea from, now that they merged and now it's just the USL, they're doing USL. NFL kickoff. Like, they're not even doing that kickoff in the spring. So it's really interesting. It'd be really cool to see how that looks in the NFL. What, no shade to XFL, but with NFL level talent, I'll just be curious with the speed and everything like that, just how it looks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they said in the XFL 2023, 90%, over 90% of kickoffs returned.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it as it's a good idea made better by a better product with the NFL adapting it.
Like Apple, what they do to Samsung.
Wow. As a proud Samsung diehard.
I'm a proud Android user, but not a Samsung user.
Hey, listen, you know better than anyone. You see the Apple when they're like, hey, this brand new feature, and Amazon or Android's like, we've had that for 2 years. No one was like, no one said,
where have you guys been? Like,
big thing, look.
One more thing. With the rule proposal here to mention before we talk about the drop tackle stuff, the tuck rule remains in place. No proposal for eliminating the tuck rule. Thoughts on that? I'm in favor. I think it was silly to even propose eliminating a play like that.
It's finally here. March Madness, one of the most exciting sports weeks of the year, and it's about to be made even better by combining it with the excitement of Prize Picks. Testing my skills on Prize Picks over the past year has been my favorite way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few quick taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and the best part is that you can make your entries in under 60 seconds. Prize Picks has quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types, and that's what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. March Madness is always fun. A ton of epic moments, buzzer beaters, and unparalleled drama. But this year, it's going to be even more epic than ever while using Prize Picks to bring that excitement to an entirely new level. This past week, I used Prize Picks to make selections on Victor Wembanyama, Lionel Messi, Connor Bedard, and the Badgers' Tyler Wall. There are so many options to choose from that you'll never run out of new ways to use Prize Picks. And the absolute best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Just download the app and use code PACKADAY and receive a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Eating healthy can be a challenge. If you're anything like me, I'm trying to make 2024 my best year ever. I'm trying to eat right, maintain a high level of energy, and make the right choices for my own personal health. But as much as I want to make the right choices, running to the butcher or the high-end grocery stores every single day to get a fresh quality cut of meat just isn't feasible. Thankfully, that's where Good Chop comes in, and it has completely changed my life. I'm so thankful that I found Good Chop because now I can get 100% grass-fed meat like ribeyes, filet mignon, organic chicken breasts, pork tenderloin, and so much more delivered directly to my door. Last night, cooked up organic chicken breasts, made my famous chicken curry. Yes, that is a true story. It is to die for. You would love to try it. And the chicken was incredible. Fresh, tender, unbelievable flavor. The best part was that I didn't even have to go to the store to get it. And Good Chop's price per meal starts at just $3.74, and their boxes are fully customizable with delivery to your door on your schedule. So go to goodchop.com/packaday120 and use code packaday120 to get $120 off across your first four boxes. That's code packaday120 at goodchop.com/packaday120 for $120 off. goodchop.com/packaday120 using code packaday120. What are you waiting for?
You know what's funny? When's the last time you've even seen it called?
Right. That's what I was going to say. I don't even think about the tuck rule. Like, that's how infrequently
I cannot remember.
Oh, no, no. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say the tuck? I'm so sorry. I meant the tush push. The tush push.
I was going to say,
the last time I heard anyone. Monty, it was the theme of last year.
The tush push. I'm never in favor of getting rid of something just because one team is better at it than everyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, not many teams stopped it. And if it was such an unstoppable play, why did so many other teams fail when they tried? So you can't punish a team for figuring something out within the rules and then just being better at it than everyone else. I hope they don't get rid of it, but I mean, all the breadcrumbs are there that they're trying to legislate it out, even if it's going to be, you guys remember later last year, they started calling a penalty on it. To discourage people from doing it. So they clearly doesn't seem like they want to keep it. So I assume it'll be gone.
Yeah. I feel similar. The tush push has always, to me, just been kind of like an elevated quarterback sneak as is. Like, it's just like one team figured out how to do it in a way that no one else can stop. And it reminds me of like being younger, playing Madden against like my uncle, and he's running the same play over and over, and you're like, do something different. Like, why don't you stop it? Like, that's how the tush push is, where it's like, if you know it's coming, so it's not like the advantage of surprise is on their side. Like, you know what's happening, figure out how to stop it.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think it was silly to even consider banning it because one team ran it pretty good versus everybody else running it okay. Completely bypass. I'm itching to get to this hip drop tackle thing. Two other things here to talk about with the other side. I do think on the kickoffs, if you are doing, because part of the kickoff as well, onside kicks, You have to, there's no more of the surprise onside kicks. I think if you're going to do this, if you're going to implement this new style of kickoff, just go all the way and implement the rule that the Eagles have been trying to propose of the onside kick. It's convert a 4th and 20.
Yeah, that'd be so much better for the game.
Why are we, if we're going to drastically alter what this kickoff, what the kickoff looks like, this huge part of the game, just do the whole thing, go the full 9 yards and just see how it works.
You know? Isn't it? It's 4th and 20 from your own,
like 35 or something like 35? That. Yeah. Something like that.
Okay.
Something like that. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that gives you more actual football. Right.
And right.
You want to talk about those situations where you're going to be using that, like where you would have onside kicked before. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to make comebacks so much more exciting, right? Because if a team goes out there and converts that, so now they've got the first down. I mean, even if they don't pick up another one, like it gives you another drive in the game of actual football. And people always want more football, right? That's why we've got 17 game season now, and I'm sure 18 is going to be a couple years from now. And they play on Monday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday, and Friday this coming year with the Brazil game.
Yeah.
So more football, the better. I think that's what that rule gives you, and they should absolutely do that.
Now, for me, I don't mind them saying, like, the onside kick, you can only do it in the fourth quarter, and you have to declare. Like, that actually doesn't bother me as much. Like, when I first heard it, I was like, but it takes away the element of surprise. Like, what if, like, it's a situation, like, why would you do that? Then I actually sat there and I was like, well, how many times do teams actually do surprise onside kicks? And I heard it on the Pat McAfee show when they were talking about it, and they were like, it's actually really not that frequently. Like, maybe it's a handful of times in the season where someone's trying to do a surprise onside kick. So it's like, you're not going to miss too much out of it. So for me, it's like, if that's the exchange I have to get in order to see the new kickoff rule implemented, that I have to give up surprise offensive kicks or offsides kicks, I'll take that exchange.
Yeah, I can live without onside
kicks. I can live with it.
Especially as
Packers fans, we don't want to see that play ever again.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
You didn't have to say anything else but that. And it's like,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. No, I just always think back to that the Saints Colts Super Bowl versus just exit. Oh my God. Those are just kind of those things that you.
But even that was what, 2006?
That was a long time. It was 2009. It was the year right
2009. That's
the
right.
Packers.
For the Packers.
Yeah. The other thing too, the other one that did not get proposed, was proposed is not getting put up for a vote, is the fumble out of the end zone as a turnover and touchback.
I support that rule.
I support it as well, but it's also one of those ones where, like, someone that really ardently supports not changing it can make a pretty good argument for me to say, like, yeah, well, like, hang on to the ball. Like, I get it, but I'm with you too. Like, it seems silly to make that. Like, why is that a rule? You know, I would like to see that one change too.
I like the rule.
Oh, you like the rule currently?
I'm pro fumble touchback.
You're pro fumble.
Yeah. Let's hear the debate.
So the way I look at it is, like you said earlier, people look at football now and say, you know, this isn't football. Everything's changed. Like, everything favors the offense pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't mind something that punishes them for not doing the main purpose, which is just don't fumble, right? The end zone is supposed to be holy ground. That's why the rules change for catches in the end zone. That's why all the things are different once you cross the plane. I just think if you're going to reach out for the pylon, like, or reach for the end zone, like, you better make a conscious decision to do it. Or don't, you know, be lazy with the ball at the goal line. But even above that, I like the rule because it almost always ends up being high leverage when it happens in a game. Like, it doesn't really happen in a blowout necessarily that often. It's always almost in high leverage situations, which makes the game way more exciting.
My counter to that is that it's a awful rule when it happens to the Packers, but hilarious.
That is true.
It's hilarious when it happens to anybody else.
Yeah, high leverage.
When it happens to the Packers, it is a terrible rule and needs to be addressed by the NFL committee.
I think Monty won that argument right there.
I think he did.
You did have a strong point, though. I had to think about it for a second.
No, I think you made a pretty compelling with the high leverage of like, and also to beautifully segue into our final topic with the NFL Rules Committee, everything favors the offense extraordinarily lopsided, like one way. And so a rule that benefits the defense at one point in a high leverage situation maybe isn't such a bad thing.
And it benefits them only because it's almost always self-inflicted by the offense.
So. Sure, exactly. Yeah. But on the other side, this other rule, the hip drop tackle ban. I want to read the exact wording from, I had it up here, I need to find it now again, the exact ruling that the NFL put out there, because it's
kind of word salad.
It's word salad. It's very corporate-y speak, that rule. If a defender, quote, grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms and also, quote, unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. I did not look it up, but I challenge the NFL Rules Committee on this one. If this was Scrabble, I'm challenging. I don't think unweight is a word. I do not believe that is a word. I think they made that up.
I'm on your side on that one. I don't believe that to be an actual real word.
But so basically the rule, it's those tackles that you see the player, you'll wrap up and you kind of, you're the defender's body, you go limp to drag the defender down. And what we've seen is an uptick in injuries with this, where, you know, just like in a horse collar tackle, or if you, you know, clip somebody, you're wrapping up those legs underneath the weight of two other bodies falling down. And that's where you get a lot of these injuries. I understand the message and the point behind the rule. I just don't see how you can possibly enforce this in a way that is fair across all scenarios, or at least the majority of them.
Well, and the worst part is that, you know, they said in a statement, we trust that our officials will be able to see it and call
since
it correctly.
The
officiating has been a huge topic with how bad it is for, I mean, almost like the last 10 years, but the last like 3 or 4, it has been loud rhetoric about how bad the officiating is. So for them to try to lean on, like, say, like, we're going to lean on the officials to see it correctly, like that feels like a slap in the face to the fans of the game, first of all. But then, to even simplify it, what really sucks is, so if there's a guy running at you with the ball straight ahead, you have a very small window where you can hit him head on, right? Mm-hmm. Can't go high, can't go low. You got to kind of hit in the strike zone, which some of these players run at 20 miles an hour. So good luck. And then if you're coming from the side, same thing, right? You can't go high, you can't go low, but you also can't grab them from inside the jersey and pull them down, which that is good. Like the horse collar is one that made sense.
Yeah.
So now if you're running up to the ball carrier from behind, how are you supposed to
tackle?
Like they have momentum running forward. You can't try to stop them by pulling them backward. So you got to push them forward and make them fall on their stomach. Like it, and that's what Richard Sherman said. They should make them try that in real, like to try to make a tackle or to have someone see it in real time to see how impossible this is going to be for the players to not get called up. And you know, it's not going to be called consistent, which is, that's going to be the most frustrating thing.
That's going to be no consistency. That right there is exactly going to be the problem. The problem The problem is that it is such a dubious definition. There is, and that's why they're using words like unweights or this, is because you can kind of say unweights, who knows what it sort of means. Like, and it is actual word, unfortunately.
Oh, you looked it up.
Lost the
I did look it up. I know. This is why I lose Scrabble a lot. But it's this dubious definition that really doesn't have it. It leaves so much up to the interpretation.
Right.
And like you said, Monty, it feels like such a slap in the face to anyone who has watched the NFL over the last, call it 10 years, 10 years or so. Really, it's been since that last, the last official strike in, what was it, 2011, 2012?
Yeah, that's what gave us the Fail Mary because
right,
of that.
Right. Yeah. Ever since that point, it seems like there has just been a sharp decline in the consistency of officiating. And I don't think it's all the officials' fault. I think the NFL and the rules committee tries to insert themselves and make a completely imperfect game more perfect.
Yeah.
You're never going to get that. And we keep getting more and more of these situations like this. There will guaranteed be at least, there will be multiple games next year that are decided based on, and at the end, in the end, on a call like this. Because of
did
a,
it,
because of
attack. Did it actually get approved?
No, it's getting these are both getting voted on. And okay. I think later on this month.
Because I remember I don't know if you guys saw, but the Players Association released a statement that they're vehemently against it. Like they were in no uncertain terms how they felt about it. So we'll see. Sense. Yeah, we'll see if that it's taken into effect, but yeah, I'm really hoping that one doesn't go through.
Me too, because here's the thing with it. I applaud the efforts that the NFL has been making to make this sport safer because football is violent. And that's the thing about football. It is innately a violent sport. Like I say it often. I heard one of my co-hosts say when he's like, injuries in football are a feature, not a bug. Like that is what is going to happen. It is a very violent sport. So improvements to the helmets, I'm with it. Not letting players target, I'm with it. Like I get it, but like you have to give the defensive players some area on the body to try to go for. And to say like if you're like on the side or behind somebody and you're trying to wrap them up, like the thing you're going to think about, I'm going to use their momentum against them to bring them down. Like that's just what you would think. And it's just giving players another thing to think about while they're trying to play defense, they're already trying to think like, I can't go high, I can't go low, I got to like, and these players are moving so fast. And it's just going to be difficult, I think, to also call consistently, like you said, at least with a horse collar, you can see a hand very clearly going into a collar. And it happens, like even in real time, you're like, ah, I can see that looks like a horse collar. So I just, It just feels messy to me. It feels like another disadvantage for the defense. It's not something that I think is going to be called consistently. And it's something where you're trying to make the game safer again, but you might make it more dangerous because you're making these defensive players have to even think more. Now, where are they going to aim when they're going for their tackles? And we already know in practice, they don't get as much time to do live tackling.
Right, that's the other thing.
So like, how are they going? Like they're going to do this offsite at like various different camps. That's not necessarily NFL like mandate. Like, you know what I mean? It's just so many different moving parts to it.
Which they don't like you doing either.
Right, and they point to the fact that, you know, in rugby, they ban the hip drop. And it's like, that's a different sport. Like, rugby and football, they're cousins, sure, but they're different.
Right. Rugby is a completely different animal. Like, it's so different. And the thing that I think gets overlooked here is every time the NFL talks about this in terms of, well, we looked at the data and the increase of injuries goes sharply up when defenders are doing the hip drop tackle. Do we ever look at the data from the other side of how much more are defenders getting hurt because they're having to tackle in ways that are more unsafe for them?
For them, yeah.
Or like you said, Camille, they're having to stop and think an extra split second about how am I going to tackle Derrick Henry running 25 miles an hour right down my throat. Like, and now the defender is putting himself in a worse position bodily because he has to think about, well, I can't tackle him low. I can't go high. I can't come from behind. I can't do the hip drop. I can't do the, and I'm not saying that they think about that all the time, but like you just give them one extra thing to like, I have to consider when they're sizing up. Like I said, like a guy like Derrick Henry or DK Metcalf, like
this has to be, then that decision has to be made in a split second. So,
right. Yeah. And so I'd be really interested to see what does that data look like from the other side of, sure, you've done this. And so you change the way defenders are tackling and injuries are down, but are injuries is that injuries as a total? Is it injuries for offensive players? Is it injuries for defensive players? How does that affect the health of defensive players? Because yes, it's a competitive disadvantage for defenders right now too, but it always seems like we focus on the health or the well-being of the offensive player. Mm-hmm. It feels almost like a perp vic kind of thing, you know, like the victim is always the offensive player and we have to protect him from the bad guy, the defensive player who's going to come and hit him. Like, guys, it's football. They're going to get hit. And I understand, do what you can to ultimately protect these guys overall. But you know what? I bet they would probably respect or appreciate even more than changing the rules on them every 2 years and changing how they play football. Lifetime health care, pensions, real health care for them.
Tangible
effects for after the game of football. When they're suffering from these injuries, they're going to happen no matter how safe you try to make
right, the game. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So
it's a feature, not a bug, unfortunately.
Yeah, get off my little soapbox there.
All right, so 3-0 against. There we go. It's not happening.
Down.
Yeah,
thumbs down. well, I think that that puts a bow on it pretty well for us here in the Pack a Day podcast. I want to thank Andy for letting us jump on and trusting us with the reins on the YouTube side as well as over on the podcast side. Whether you're following us, make sure that you're following both medium because we've got different episodes on different streams. There's so much content through the Pack-A-Day podcast family. So make sure you're following us everywhere on the YouTube side, everywhere you find your podcasts. Share, subscribe, rate, review. It helps us tremendously, especially as we get even closer into the draft. It's the start of March Madness. So the draft is literally right around the corner. It's going to sneak up on us like that. So make sure you're sticking with us as we keep going through the rest of this offseason. Monty, Camille, where can people find you out on the socials if they so choose?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Ferdgerson, F-E-R-D underscore T-U-R-G-E-S-O-N.
Twitter and Instagram at Camille Monae, C-A-M-I-L-L-E-M-O-N-A-E.
Great. And you can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky. I'm over on Blue Sky as well, at DK all the way. Make sure you're following us on all three of us, all of the Pack-A-Day podcast stuff as well. We will be back again next Friday. Until then, everyone, stay safe. And as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.